Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
This week on Meetin' 3, we're ringing in the start of our fifth season with dispatches from Portland, Oregon's biggest food festival, Feast Portland. We're bringing you words of wisdom on launching a food business from food blogs.
Most acquaintances from high school have now tried to start a food or fashion blog in some sense and quit very quickly afterwards.
To ice cream shops.
Every city you go to, the Salt and Straw is completely different than any other city.
We'll bring you insights and anecdotes about the business of the business.
We were like, cool, we're going to do this. We're going to try to raise $75,000 and we'll see what happens. And it was like the most gut-wrenching, miserable month.
Tune in to Meetin' 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's October 1st, 2019, and you know what? I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio. It's Heritage Radio Network's 10th anniversary. We have our gala coming up November 11th, so check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. This is a special show. Many years ago, I was enlightened by Dan Shelton of Shelton Brothers Imports and learned a lot more about the different beers and traditional beer styles that I still love and follow very closely. The festival is coming up in Buffalo. If you're listening to this live or this week, it's this weekend in Buffalo, and it's a roving festival that gets moved around every year, and some of the coolest places that you never would have gone to, you'll go for the festival. One year it was Worcester, Massachusetts. It's been in Louisville, Kentucky. This year it's Buffalo, New York. So because of it, this week and next week, we've got some really special guests. Let's just go around the room and introduce who's here now. We have more guests coming in. So everybody, let's tell everybody who you are.
Hi. I'm Peter Kiek from Põhjala Brewery, Tallinn, Estonia.
Wow, in Estonia. I've heard so much about you. I know last year some of the brewers that we know were at your festival in Estonia.
Yeah, Tallinn Craft Beer Weekend. That happens every first weekend of May.
That's great. We have so much to talk about with you. And our other, this is a brewer that I've known his beers for a long time.
Hi, I'm Yvan de Batz from Brasserie de la Seine in Brussels, Belgium.
And we call it Brasserie de la Seine. Taras Bulba was always one of my favorite beers. Oh,
thank you.
So this is just a little snapshot of who will be at the festival in Buffalo and who's in the Shelton Brothers portfolio. And also two Shelton Brothers reps here who've been on the show many times.
I'm Joel Shelton of, what's the company called?
No idea.
Shelton Brothers.
Shelton.
And I'm B.R. Rolia, also with Shelton Brothers.
So thanks for helping putting the show together. You know, what does a festival mean to you guys? I mean, some of you are brewers coming from other countries. Tell us what the festival means to you, because I think it's a unique beer event.
I mean, the festival is always a great place to meet a lot of our U.S. friends and make new. But the most heartwarming is actually to run into the beer lovers, you know, that we might be connected via social media. But, you know, to meet in person, that's always special. And to discuss beer and hear their comments and, you know, get inspired and new ideas.
Yeah, Peter, you're very interesting. I mean, so in Tallinn, Estonia, tell us about the background of that part of the world. I mean, you're kind of Nordic. You're
Estonia,
not Russian.
Just below Finland and the west of Russia. It's a small Nordic country that is highly well connected with Finland, being our languages being connected. And I would say that our cultural inspiration and influence comes from the north. And the reason we started to brew dark beers at first place was to just underline our long heritage with a dark beer, as Estonia being a homeland of Baltic porter.
Baltic porters, yeah.
So, and that was the very first beer we also brewed and released in February 2013.
That's great. And Yvonne, so tell us, for you, what does the festival mean? I mean, you've been with the Shelton Brothers for many years.
Yeah, definitely. Since I'm a professional brewer, actually. Well, the festival for me means friendship and values. Friendship because it's really a great community of fellow brewers and sharing the same values like authenticity, research of quality, etc. So that's the two keywords for me.
And for you, Tara's Boba to me is this benchmark of a light, low alcohol, you know, hoppy pale ale. Mm-hmm. Are there traditions in Belgium of hoppy beers?
Actually, there is. If you look at the history, it has unfortunately been lost in the 1960s, step by step. But before that, the Belgian beers were way hoppier than they are now, and then the image people have of them now, definitely. Also, some of the beers were dry hopped. There is a tendency in America to think that Americans invented dry hopping. It's probably the British who did. But dry hopping was a common practice for some styles in Belgium also.
Wow, and in Brussels, so you're one of only a few breweries in Brussels.
Yeah, we are 7 authentic breweries now in Brussels and some fake brewers, unfortunately.
Well, because I think of Brussels as like the center of beer in the world, and Belgian beer.
It has been in the past. In the turn of the 1900s, we got, it's difficult to count, but about 250 active breweries in the city. Not all of them having brewing equipment. So some of them had it. Some were buying either wort or finished beer to age it in wooden barrels and blend it and make their own beer with their own taste. But it has been, yeah, probably 250, maybe 300 breweries. I have a funny number to tell. In 1882, we have beaten Munich in being the city where the most beer was drunk per capita per head. And it was at the time 445 liters of beer drunk by the Brussels population. That includes the babies and the elderly people.
And I think Joel wants to say something. Does that make sense, Joel? Was that enough beer for everybody?
Well, it was probably enough for the babies, but I'm not sure about the big, strong men like myself. I didn't know that about Brussels, actually, but you always hear about Munich and places like that, but I guess they could chug some brew in Belgium in the old days.
Yeah, actually, beer was really part of the culture. You would start drinking beer when you would be like 4 or 5 years old and drink it all your life. Beer was part of every social event and family event as well. There were still mothers doing home brewing, but most of them, they would go to the breweries with a jug of their own and fill the jug at the brewery with some beer, bringing at home and drink it for dinner, lunch, etc., etc. So it was really, really part of everyday's life.
Joel.
And to this day, the classic brewers in Brussels love to go to Franconia in northern Bavaria to see that culture still thriving today of going to get wort from a brewery and fermenting it yourself. Isn't that correct, Yvonne?
It's correct for myself. I think that Franconia is actually the only place on Earth now where you can still touch that deep culture of beer being part of everyday's life. And it's a beautiful region, it's a cultural region, and every single little village still has a brewery, sometimes two. A village of like 3,000 inhabitants can have 2 breweries easily. I mean, and Belgium was like that in the past. Every single place at the brewery. In 1907, we had 3,338 breweries, if I'm not wrong, in a very small country. I mean, so yeah, Franconia is still a bit like that.
Yeah, and then Peter. So Estonia, what is the brewing culture there? You know, the food culture going back a couple hundred years.
I mean, Estonians still to this day are very much the do-it-themselves people. So when the craft beer and home brewing trend hit the country, it was very widely spread. And to this day, I think the part of very vibrant craft beer culture in Estonia is much based on a strong home brewers community. So, and the other thing is that Estonia has maintained over the centuries the knowledge of all the good herbs and knowledge of the forest. Forest used to be our pharmacy. And to this day, you know, many, like the herbal produces are used. And we also use them in some of our beers. So in that case, we're actually sipping right now the Torm, which is our part of our forest series. It's Imperial Kose, the German Kose. And we have imperialized it with honey, heretips, and brewed with lingonberries. So it's a fruity, and the honey notes are clearly there. and the heather is just giving a little bit of herbal spicing to it.
Great. What do you think, Yvonne? I mean, for you, coming to the festival, you get to meet a lot of new breweries for the first time. Do you have any questions for Peter from Estonia?
We have a lot of questions. I think those Northern Europe beer culture are really, really fascinating, and have been totally underestimated until recently. You have some stars like the Sati in Finland or historic beers in all the Baltic countries that are really, really fascinating. And those beers help us to like almost touch the history on the liquid form. And the use of those herbs, among others, are to me really, really interesting. For sure, I'm getting really fascinated by those beers. I still have a lot to learn about them, but it's for me they might be the new thing in brewing.
Peter,
so this Storm beer, it's like you said, it's a classic beer with a little bit of a twist, and we tend to release two or three beers from a forest series every year, so it's. The list is long, and I can just no. I will not talk about that. It was too early.
Can you name some parts of plants coming from the forest that you would use? Like, do you use bark, for instance? Or,
I mean, yeah,
or
we have used
mushrooms or stuff like that. Or
very good questions. Thank you. We have used we have actually a beer that was very much using the birch tree. So, because the birch sap is a very similar thing to a maple syrup or maple sap, so we used a lot of birch sap. It was a collaboration with a Finnish brewer, and he brought 600 liters of birch sap that we used in the boil. Plus, we used the birch bark in the boil in that case. And we have just released a beer called Porcini, which we used porcini mushroom in dried form and also powdered form. So the mushroom picking is a huge thing in Estonia, and right now it's the season.
Okay. Sounds very cool. And I'm sure your yeast liked it very much when you use that sap, because it must be full of very nice nutrients for her and oligo elements and stuff like that.
Absolutely, and it left a very nice, like a spicy, earthy umami notes behind. Mm-hmm. And we would also want to go on with that and get a bit more, because we do a lot of barrel aging, and you know, we take a patience with some of the beers, so we would want to see that how that bark actually evolves in the beer over time. So mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of ideas we have, and we haven't been put in practice yet.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, what kind of yeasts are you using? Did you find like old yeast, local yeast?
No,
like for the Kvag beer and
we are
and
in
stuff?
That sense we're playing a lot with our history and the knowledge. But we are very much American-inspired brewer, mm-hmm. and we are using yeast from White Labs, and mm-hmm. and over time, they come our house yeast, because mm-hmm. we have a lab at the brewery with a lab manager with a biology background, so we take a pretty good care of our yeast, and all that said, you know, I'm not the brewer. I'm one of the founders of the brewery, and for years I've been focusing on sales and marketing. So, if the questions get very technical, I'll be very honest. You know, it's a White Labs yeast.
Okay.
Let me ask. So about that, just tell us your backstory, because to me you're new. You guys were kind of a gypsy brewery. Tell us how you got started and the first system that you bought.
There's the brewery is founded by three friends, and we added quickly our head brewer and the first investor. So it's like six persons actually. It's a kind of a collective project, and we were three friends who were very much culinary background. We got together, we cooked a lot, and then we got to the home brewing, and when we saw the craft beer thing starting, then very early on we decided that, you know, we were exactly at the stage of in our lives, we all have entrepreneurial backgrounds and love for food and beer, and at that point, at 2011, we decided that from that hobby we'll make a business out of it, and we opened our first brewery in 2013. We released the first beers at Gypsy's. We were Gypsy for a year and a half, released five, six beers, brewed much more, dumped a lot. And then in January, April 2014, we opened our own brewery that came from Premier Stainless San Diego.
So you bought a system from America.
Yeah, it was kind of a brew pub kit. You know, it was a 12-hec brew house with 24-hec fermenters. And we kind of grew out of that pretty quick, and the demand for our beers grew. And last winter, we opened a new brewery, this time a German from Rolec. And we opened that in an old historical shipyard just right outside of the city center. So beautiful, beautiful location. So I invite you, all of you, to come and visit.
Tell us about Tallinn, your city of Tallinn.
Tallinn is...
What's the history of that city?
City founded in 1154. So old Hanseatic Union city, beautiful architecture, part of UNESCO Heritage Protection Program.
So you guys, it's been traded with Copenhagen and Hamburg, Germany.
Oh yeah, we were
Stockholm.
We've been part of Sweden, Denmark, Germany, Russia. So we have a colorful history that has left a mark in history. I mean, in people, in architecture, but also colorful and great society to live in.
You guys are a little bit like Belgium. All the neighbors invaded you at some point.
Exactly. It's a destiny of small nations and countries.
And let's go back to yeast. So I read a note about you, Ivana. You started calling the yeast she or her.
Of course. Yeah, definitely.
So said like the yeast, we make her happy or not happy.
Mm. For me, it's the duty of a brewer. Yeast is the most important character in your brewery. She makes everything. And I call her she because... In my language, it's a she. In your language, should be a it. But I cannot think about my yeast thinking it's a thing. It's alive. It's very sensitive, and I have a personal, I would say, relation to her. And indeed, because she's doing all the hard job, she's our employee of the month, like forever. I want her to have a good life. And
you guys like that, right? She is an employee of the month, the yeast.
And so I designed special fermenters for her so that she doesn't get any hydrostatic pressure, because that kind of pressure would give her some stress. And so it's fermenters that are wider than tall, actually. It's kind of stupid from a business point of view, because you need more floor space to put a certain volume. So it doesn't make any sense when you think about business purely. But I can tell that for the quality of fermentation and hence the quality of beer, it truly makes a huge difference. It gives beers that are way more balanced, actually. And I will never regret to have taken that decision.
When you started, when did you first make Taras Bulba? Why did you make that beer? I love that beer. It fits such a niche in my experience with this lighter, you know, 4-something% hoppy pale ale.
At the time, it was a niche in the niche in the niche, because our main beer was at the time, and still is actually, our Belgian pale ale Zinne beer. But we were brewing in our very first brewery in the suburbs of Brussels, a village called St. Petersley, with a very, very small location. And we had a very small brew kit, which we built ourselves using second-hand dairy tanks. And we could bottle out of that like a little bit more than 3 US barrels, basically nothing. And we were all brewing manually with a wooden pitchfork. Everything was manual. It was very hard and long days, even if the volume was quite small, and so we are totally exhausted and very thirsty at the end of the day. And Zinne beer is a beer that has 5.8 ABV, and that was the beer we drank after making it, of course, but at some point it became a little bit too strong in alcohol. So we decided, okay, let's make a lighter beer just for quenching our thirst after a hard day of work, and it was Taras Bulba. And so the first batch was meant to be drunk by ourselves only. 3 barrels when you are thirsty, it's not a lot of beer, you know. And then some friends came, they found it was great beer, then they brought some bottles to some bars, and the owners found it was very interesting beers, and the whole story started like that, but from a very selfish point of view. That beer was really meant to be drunk by us at the very first.
Was that beer like older beers from Belgian, you know, traditions, like a Hommel beer or something like that?
Somehow maybe like some beers from West Flanders at some point. But when we made it, it was like a small revolution because you had no light beer in Belgium. And with that beer, we wanted to show to the people that you don't need alcohol to have flavor and to have taste, actually. And it's really a beer. Yeah, I cannot say exactly where it just come from somewhere in our mind. I would say I will not claim it's a historical beer because I don't think it is. As I told you, the Belgian beers used to be way hoppier than they are now. But I'm not sure that a beer like Tarasbuba has ever existed. Let's say that we have been extremely selfish and we made a beer that is a kind of a like our definition of beer, if you want. So oh, something great. Simple, just quenching. You one doesn't have to forget that beer is meant to hydrate humans at first, and so that's the purpose with Tarasbuba.
Quenching. You guys, Bior and Joel, you guys have worked with De La Seine for so many years. How do you sell it? You know, do you ever have to sell it, or there's diehards like me who just buy it?
Well, now there are diehards who buy it. It was challenging at first because, especially, you know, if people are looking at the price point, and at the time people thought of Belgian ales as being extremely strong, extremely alcoholic, very sweet. So here they are getting, you know, a 4% beer that comes in at pretty much a similar price point, not realizing that it doesn't cost that much more to, you know, add in the malt to make a strong beer, to make a quality beer that's lower in alcohol on a similar scale. So that was a bit of a challenge, but we now have the converts. Tonight we're all going over to the Well, and they have a permanent line of Tarasbuba because Ian came on. Shout out to Shelton Brothers Insider Tours. We were all in Belgium in May and visited the brewery, and Ian, the buyer from the Well, was there and felt, I mean, he liked the beer, but once there realized how much he loved the beer, now it's like, I've got to have that beer on all the time at my bar. So you get people who become converts, and then once they become a convert, they're not giving it up.
Yeah, and shout out to the Well. There's three brewers there tonight. But there's always stuff happening at the Well, not too far from here in Messerol Street in Bushwick. You got who's there tonight?
These both of you guys are there.
So
they have to go because they're with us now. They can't leave.
And how do you, Peter, say the name of your brewery again?
Pohjola,
but to me it looks like Pojala.
Pohjola.
They pronounce things.
And your friends from Spain who are
not part beer will
historically
be with us
late for the show.
They're on Spanish time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But so that's going to be a great business. But so the next beer, so you are good at sales, Peter. You're great, man. You kind of built, you've been on the map from everyone all last year, different brewers in New York. Like, I know Pete from KCBC wants to go to your festival in Estonia. What were some other brewers from New York who came out to visit you and who might be making beer with you?
This year, May, we had Other Half and we had Evil Twin over.
So Sam Richardson from Other Half.
Yeah, Sam was over and we brewed two beers, double IPA and...
So your festival is in Estonia in May.
Yes.
It's not winter.
No.
It's nice weather.
Next year, 1st and 2nd of May, tcbw.ee. That's the website. Tallinn Craft Beer Weekend. But it's a rather international. I mean, we have 50 brewers, 10-15 from Estonia, rest from Europe and North America. We have great lineup of friends coming over.
Joel? If I can promote our tour a little bit, since we have these two guys with us, we're going to do another
Belgium
France tour in May, in which you'll hopefully see Yvonne if he's
May 2020.
May 2020, something like May 3rd to 8th, if I recall. And for the lucky few who feel like being adventurous, we're going to have a little jaunt up to the Tallinn Fest. Right
in
before
Estonia.
That, so it can actually, literally, one day to the next, you can join the Belgium-France one right after the Tallinn one. So it's going to be just for a few people. Whoever hears this radio show can go on that tour.
All right. And then this next beer from Tallinn.
Yeah, this is...
Pohjola.
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 Yeah, it has
the
softness.
It reads Pohjola to me.
Yeah, I mean...
Don't fight it, Jimmy.
Pohjola.
Very good. So the beer we're sipping now is actually 4.5 years old beer. So this is the very first edition of Tanilin, the beer we brewed with our friends from Copenhagen, Tuol. They came over and we celebrate.
Tuol, wow.
Great. Yeah, because we have a long history with the Danes, and this is to celebrate the historic heritage of Denmark in Tallinn. And this is 14% Imperial Stout with several spices, including cinnamon, star anise, and I'm forgetting the rest because there's years since we brewed it. And then we aged it 8 months in a cognac barrels. And this is just, it's a part of our cellar series, meaning all cellar series have barrel aged and they've been waxed. So it's just to encourage people to buy extra and hold on to them, because this, like I said, this beer is real old, and I could say that it's hold on very well and it improved a lot, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, does anyone want to comment on it? I think it held up well. I mean,
well, this is a beer, actually. You had someone from Tuol on a year or two ago, and
yes,
he was talking about this beer, and you were very excited about it, and we had none of it because it had not arrived.
He had just made the beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, and you also, so I guess I'm trying to figure out, you have another barley wine that you said is new. So for buyers out there and consumers, what's their strategy for getting one of these strong beers that's age-worthy? You know, so tell us the beer that's out now. And is it going to be available in the States, BR? Do you know that?
I mean, we are shipping, I would say, like, we're shipping at least 6-7 different barrel-aged beers annually to the States. So every 2 months there's something new and exciting available from us, and not just one beer. Every time we send beer over is at least like 2-3 new styles.
Yeah, but I guess brands. I'm saying for the importers, what should a bar or bottle shop, what should we do with this beer? Should we buy it and then keep it?
Or
are you guys going to hold any back?
No, we don't hold any back, unless there have been some times where a brewery has sent us something and said, you know, we've tasted this, it's not ready, can you please hold on to this in your warehouse for, you know, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months? But for us, I mean, that's warehouse space that's being taken up. So, you know, in general, the beer comes in, the beer goes out. I think that one of the most recent barrel-aged beers we had from you was the Port Over Easy, the Jester King collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
I know we got that fairly recently. I mean, basically, as soon as something comes in, it gets put on our lists, unless it's something very exclusive and limited, in which case we hide it from everyone and only allocate it to our best distributors and best accounts. But otherwise, yeah, it's fair game. Everyone, it's in. If you grab it, great. If not, you know, we're sold out.
And I want to add that it's one of the great qualities of Shelton Brothers is that there is a very well thought turnover, and the beer arrives fresh and leaves the warehouse very fresh and gets to the final customer very, very fresh. So we are very happy with that. We make very sensitive beers. And so that's extremely important for us, and it works well with the Sheltons.
Let's talk about a different style. So we've got you guys at Poala started making beer with Baltic Porter, but I know one of my favorite De La Sem beers was the Stout Eric. Do you want to talk about Belgian stouts?
Yeah, definitely. It's very strange, the relationship between the Belgians and the stouts. Actually, from 1900. Until 1960s, the stouts were extremely, extremely popular in Belgium. If you had a brewery in this country and you had no stout in your range of beer, you would go bankrupt very, very quickly, and you would look like a loser almost.
Loser.
Exactly. And then for some reasons, since the late 60s and especially 70s, the Belgian people lost totally their love for stouts, and the style almost disappeared. When we were making our first stout, that was in 2005, if I recall well, there was only a very few old-fashioned Belgian stouts that were like 6-7 ABV, extremely sweet, like barely drinkable. They're very bad stouts, actually. And once again, we like stouts, the idea was to please up our palates again, to be very selfish. And we started with Stouterik. The first year we only did one batch. We drank most of it ourselves. Nobody wanted it. Then the second year, 2-3 batches. Then more and more, and now it's still our least selling beer, but it's getting more and more popular. The young generations are starting again to understand the beauty of those beers, and I don't know here, but in Belgium there is an image about stouts that because it's dark it must be strong and heavy, And Stoutwick is an inspiration of Irish dried stout. It's everything but heavy and strong.
Was it like 4% alcohol?
It's actually 5%, but it's a beer that is very easy to drink, just quenching. It's a beer I love to drink on a terrace in the summer. For most of the Belgium, it is a winter-like image for some reason. But no, it's really a beer you can drink all day, all year long.
I want to go to the well and have the Taras Bulba on tap. Do you think they'll have any Stout Eric tonight?
I know they have the Taras Bulba. I don't think they have the Stout Eric.
Great. We're off to a great start. We're getting ready for the festival, the Shelton Brothers event in Buffalo, New York, which is this coming weekend. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out. It's our 10th anniversary gala coming up November 11th on heritageradionetwork.org for tickets. All right, this is a special show. As many of you know, it's the festival this weekend in Buffalo, New York. It's one of the favorite roving events of the beer world, and I'm always amazed at just who comes to it. Mostly a lot of the international brewers who are represented by the Shelton Brothers. So we've been talking earlier with, let's go through it again, we've got
Yvon de Batz from Brassy de la Seine.
From Brassy de la Seine, one of my legendary brewers, Taras Bulba, drink it. And we've got
Peter Gek from Estonia, Puhela Brewery, Estonia.
And Puhela Brewery from Estonia. We've had a nice conversation talking about them, but finally the guys from Spain are here. So take it away, Jamie. Who are you guys?
I'm Jamie, clearly the Spanish member of the team. I'm Jamie, I'm from England.
Juan, just say hello and use your Spanish accent. Come on.
Juan, the owner and head brewer.
Juan, get over here.
Just say hola from a distance.
Just say hola from Navarra.
Hola, hola.
Okay. So you're based in Navarra, Spain.
We are based in Navarra, Spain, which is close to Pamplona, which is famous for the running of the bulls. And this year is also our 10-year anniversary as well. So it's a nice big celebration we've got going on at the moment.
That's great. So I've met you guys before. I met Juan before, and you know, Napa Beer has been part of the Shelton Brothers for a long time. Just tell us about what the festival means to you guys, why you came over to New York.
Well, I think basically the festival itself, it brings in so many different breweries from lots of different walks of the beer life. I think bringing the community together a little bit and bringing in old styles, new styles, combining a lot of things together makes it really very interesting. and therefore coming from Spain, having the opportunity to sort of experience all of these sort of wonderful oddities of the beer world all together in one place is certainly an opportunity that shouldn't be missed.
Yeah, and do you, this is a chance for the brewers, because it's pretend you guys are just meeting at the festival. You guys want to ask each other a question? Peter, do you have a question for Napa Beer? I mean, to me, Spain is like, I don't really think of Spain as a brewing country. We've had a number of your brewers from Barcelona, but you're in Navarra. Is there like a thriving craft beer scene in your region, or you guys stand out as something unique?
I mean, we're sort of heading towards the Basque country, as it's called, and there's probably a good another two or three breweries now coming out in that area. We're obviously the first. But we're known more for wine, to be honest. We're the heart of the wine region in Spain. But as I said, we started 10 years ago. So we kind of got a little bit of the movement going in general in Spain as a whole country. I mean, it was Barcelona is now the place that's really thriving, taking over. But I do think we were definitely sort of some of the founders in the Spanish market and in the Spanish scene in general.
Yeah. And Peter?
So, Jamie, what's the beer you're most proud of that you brewed this year so far?
Great question.
This year, very good question.
Good question.
I know Peter very well, and I don't like it when he asks me questions. I would say this year we've just started doing some Imperial Gozes. And second one. Oh, mate. Thank you very much. You just finished it. Thank you very much.
That's the newest trend we just picked up on this weekend.
This is what happens when you arrive to Beer Sessions Radio in Brooklyn and you arrive 30 minutes late that all the beer is drunk.com. we did one which was a collaboration that we'd brewed with King's Brewing from California that we've actually got in tap tonight at the Well in the event that the Shelton brothers are hosting. We're kind of making that a little bit of a series. So we've got basically changing up the fruits. We've just got a new one that we've recently canned and kegged with passion fruit and mango, which I am liking a lot.
Let's talk about Imperial Goza. So Peter from Poala made an Imperial Goza. You guys have made an Imperial Goza. Where is that coming from? Are you seeing that at other breweries, or you just decided to make that?
No, that's definitely something I'm seeing coming from over here, from the States. I think some of the bigger American breweries are sort of bringing in a lot of these styles packed with massive loads of fruit, lactose, the same with a lot of the IPAs. It's the way, I mean, being an English person myself, I'm from Kent originally, so it's...
So how did you end up in Navarra, Spain?
Oh, you don't want to ask that.
I want to know. We've been waiting half an hour for you. Come on.
Okay, right. Well, it's a long story. Exactly. How long is this program on for? 21 years ago, I left the UK and I moved to New Zealand. Then I lived in Australia where I met my ex. You asked for the details, so we'll go through the exes. she was Spanish and brought me over to Spain, and I've been there ever since.
That's great. Now, Bobby, tell us what you're doing here in New York City. So a lot of you guys are making collaborations, which is very exciting, but yours, you're really on top of it. You know, you're making one with Sand City, with LIC Beer Project, but tell us what you're doing with Barrier and what we're drinking. Bobby, introduce yourself.
Hello, world.
And tell us your name. Come on.
It's Bobby with Barrier Brewing. You know, it's an old school brewery. You may have heard of us now. We're like the grandpas, I guess. But yeah, me and Jamie, we got a little bit of history in Spain, in Miami, in a couple countries. I don't know. Yeah, most of them we can't talk about. Like
you guys shared wives or something?
We shared a bed.
That's my baby for sure. I don't know unless Jamie's claiming it.
We like to hug each other in beds occasionally.
For sure, we've shared some rooms where we've had to space out pillows between us, and yeah. He's a grower.
Well, that's funny because Yvonne was going back to what Yvonne was saying. He was saying that he calls yeast she's and hers. So does that have anything to do with it? You're hugging each other.
Tell us more about
the she yeast.
I wash myself. Mate. There's no yeast going on with me. Thank you very much.
Well, let's get back to this. Yvonne, tell us more. You consider a yeast a female, she, her.
Yeah, and I talk to her when I'm alone in the brewery because otherwise my guys would really make fun of me, but definitely when after a brew, and if I'm alone, I open the fermenter. I really talk to her. Yeah, definitely. It's important. I think that by doing that, you also get more intuition in what you do, and in brewing. I think that science is very important. Sweat is there all over love, but intuition, and working on your intuition is something very important. And it sounds like a hippie thing talking to your yeast. Okay, I get it, but honestly, I think it makes a difference.
But you do think of yeast differently than most brewers. I mean, you said you're giving more floor space, so there's more room for air. Is that why you do it that way?
No, it's a question of hydrostatic pressure. Two things. So hydrostatic pressure is the height of the column of liquid that will make a physical pressure on the yeast, and the less pressure, the better. And also the ratio between height and width. It creates a lot of positive reactions when it's white for a fermenter. And in the final result, to make the story short, What is very important for me is to have the right ratio between two chemical components that are in beer that are called higher alcohols and esters. In very tall, narrow fermenters, we have a lot of higher alcohols. And for me, at least for my beers, it's very personal what I say, too little esters. It gives beer that are a little bit aggressive to my palate, at least. In shallow fermenters, you have less higher alcohols and more esters. To be clear, you always have more high alcohols than esters, but it's in this very ratio there in the middle that you find eventually the balance of beer. And balance for me is absolutely everything in a beer. And if your beer is balanced, it means you have a high drinkability. And drinkability should be the goal when you make beer, in my opinion.
Great, man. And then, so tell us about the beer we're drinking. So Barrier here. You brought a beer. Bring me up to speed.
Yeah, well, we just brewed this one last week, so it was released. It was released on Friday, so you're having it like 4 days after it was released. It's a collab with Aslan out of Virginia. You know, heavy hitters down there. They're a bit crazy, so we get along very well on that level too. They kind of like just to go all out in everything they do, and we're kind of psychotic like that too. Probably the most hops that we've put in an IPA to date. I feel like the two that are on the table, this one pound for pound.
Let's pop and let's drink them all.
Yeah, and then we brought Shadows and Dust. We released that one last year, so this is only the second time it's came back. That was the heaviest. Before pound for pound, Shadows and Dust was the most pounds of hops we had put in. So these are our two biggest ones. And then Kick of Knowledge Pumpkin. We've never made, so this is Barrier's 10-year anniversary. I mean, that's kind of the thing with Jamie, too, what we have in common. It's Napa's 10-year anniversary, so that's one of the reasons we got together and we're here right now also. But in 10 years, we've never made a pumpkin beer, and it was kind of just to be anti, you know, the hype and everything around it, but we had a great vessel to do so in our Kick of Knowledge series, which is...
Didn't you guys make a squash beer once?
We do, called Sasquatch.
Sasquatch, yeah.
Which, man, last year it was here. It's normally every year we have it. The Kick of Knowledge pumpkin kind of took its place this year, so... Kick of Knowledge is always a lactose milkshake IPA with vanilla and coconut, and over the past year or so, we've been adding a third variant to it. So we've had Kick of Knowledge, passion fruit, Kick of Knowledge, pineapple, peach, strawberry. Yeah. So this is the first time we put pumpkin in it.
So you guys, like, what's it like working with you know, breweries from other countries? What are you doing with Napa beer?
We're brewing a double IPA. And, yeah, it's going to be super juicy, New England style, classic. I feel like when it comes to the collabs, people just want, like, the sexy beer that drives you crazy, you know? And it's still, for whatever reason right now it is, it's the Haze Boys is still the craze for when it comes to...
So a lot of the breweries that are here visiting, they're going to make a hazy IPA.
I feel like, yeah, I mean, he was just at Sand City today, too. They're doing a triple IPA, so it's still...
I mean, there does have to be an element of following the hype. At the end of the day... We are businesses as well, and you have to sort of create and demand a little bit to a certain extent. As much as we keep brewing classic ales and brews that we've been doing for many years, we do also follow the trends to a certain extent, and people are definitely still crying out for those styles. I think over here just as much as in Europe as well. So when me and Bobby were talking about it, it was basically both of our 10 years, let's do something absolutely 10 times riddled.
Jamie, what does it
hops.
Take, like, working with Sheldon Brothers, coming to the festival, going to all these different events, what does it take for you guys to cultivate a market in the States? Or are you trying to just create your whole international persona?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's very much marketing related. I mean, obviously we know that certain types of beer that we make in Spain, like hoppy IPAs and things like that, they're not necessarily beers that are going to travel well. They need to be fresh. You've got a fantastic market over here, which would be a hell of a lot to compete with as well. But we do have a barrel age program. We do stouts. We do some more Belgian style sort of beers I think it's good to get our name out there, basically. I don't think that can do you any harm whatsoever in any type of business that you're ever in. And I think this is a great market and a great opportunity to present ourselves.
And the fact is, as Jamie knows, and all the brewers that I work with, the Spanish brewers, and I tell them right away, don't send us any IPAs. We can't do it. Because now you have to have IPA made last week. Because
we have Barriers IPAs and Sand City's IPAs.
So the only chance to have, for example, a Napar beer name on an IPA is to come here and make one with an American brewer. And literally, and it costs a lot when it gets over here. So for a lot of our brewers in Europe, Yvonne's an exception because he's got some that have been around for a while and it's steady sellers. But we have to just get a few kegs of something strong and barrel aged and maybe indigenously flavored and things like that to actually justify the cost, and people want to try a new beer. So, but in Spain, the average drinker will want the IPA, but it's like the opposite. We can't take what the average drinker, we have to take something unusual. And
it's interesting because we're kind of like having to create a slightly niche market for ourselves within a greater market as it is within the States.
So what Napa beers are moving here in the States for you?
Over for the festival or in general?
In general.
In general is generally our barrel-age project. So we've got Imperial Stouts, some Gozes, Saisons, more robust beers that travel well, basically, because we want everyone who drinks our beer, we want to have it in the best possible conditions.
Yeah.
So if an IPA can't travel well, then, you know, we'd probably prefer not to send it and have a happy customer.
But even if it does travel well, people won't order it because they want one that was made last week, literally. That's what it's come to now.
Yeah. Well, and Peter, for you, so you're similar. You're from a region that's not on the map in terms of, like, you know, beer destination. Tell us more about the work you're doing, your festivals, marketing.
I mean, we're telling a story of Estonian beer. So it's sometimes people ask why did you open a new brewery, and it's not about us anymore, to be honest. You know, it's Americans here around the table, when was the last time you consumed any Estonian product, you know? So
I was in Finland.
That's very high chance that you. But yeah, it's Estonian beer.
I was
going to
say maybe there's an internet product. I don't know.
No, Estonian beer is really, you know, becoming a thing in Europe. We're working on it in America and Asian direction, and it all based on a dark beer, because this is what our love to the home brewing came from. This is what we have built our business on, that Jamie took the words out of my mouth. Exactly, you know, you have to produce a beer that, you know, will taste the best. And yeah, let's not talk even about the IPAs, because it would be bringing sand to the beach, because, you know, there's a lot of... first of all, we take the hops to Europe and then put in the beer and bring back, you know, it's like, you know, let's be green here, you know, and we're offering an experience, and it's related to the history and the story of overall of our brewery.
I want to come to Tallinn, Estonia. I want to see the old shipyards.
Exactly, it's Please. A cold, dark land up there, and we have a depressing winters with a very little sunlight. But we know how to. We have a sauna in the brewery, and we brew good dark beers that we take good care and barrel age them, and, you know, this is our joy and sun in the winter.
Bobby, have you been there? Have you been to Estonia?
No, but I've traveled all around Europe, and without a doubt, I mean, maybe when the show's over, I'll ask for an invite, because I have heard that their beer festival is one of the best that's thrown anywhere in the world. So I would love to be
May 2020, Tallinn, Estonia. BR?
That goes for me as well, actually.
Yes,
I was saying, this is actually a very good representation of how at Shelton Brothers we have to work with different beers, different breweries. I mean, Yvonne is lucky in that he's from Belgium. And I think Dan Shelton had this argument with you, saying just because it's from Belgium doesn't mean it's good, with some of your lists.
I agree.
Well, I think we can certainly agree with that. But, you know, in some ways, even though Yvonne is making some of these the lower ABV sessionable beers, simply because it's Belgian, people kind of like, oh, if it's Belgian, let me check it out.
In 2005, I was buying a Belgian triple, maybe a quad, and that was my impression of Belgian beers.
Exactly. So, you know, so he's kind of like, you know, he makes wonderful beers, but has slid in on what the general public thinks of the reputation of Belgian beers, of, oh, it's Belgian, it's good. Estonia, for a lot of Americans, they kind of lump it into the, you know, the Scandinavian countries, Nordic countries, and are really interested in those types of, the Forest Series, bringing in those unique ingredients, the strong Baltic porters, the imperial stouts, the barrel-aged beers. But then Spain, everyone thinks, oh, it's Estrella or just light lager. They don't think of Spain as a beer culture. They think of it in terms of, there's cava, there's wine, but beer, Cidra. What kind of beer? And sidra, exactly. So Spain is probably one of our most challenging countries, I'd say, to try to get people to understand that there is a really good beer culture there, and people should take notice, like it's happening, around the world. But yeah, that's probably one of our tougher countries to sell beer from.
And Jamie, we're going to wrap it up soon, but just...
I find that really interesting, and I like a challenge.
So that's
why I'm there.
How are you going to take on the world? I mean, you got Juan here.
I'm
going
to take on the world. I'm there. Say no more. Honestly, I speak for myself. You're looking at me. No one else can see me. If you can come and look through the looking glass, you just know why. We're just trying to...
And you're from England.
I am from England. I'm definitely from England. I'm old school Kent, I am. So literally from that, I mean, my granddad used to brew. I mean, my great granddad was down picking the hops from the Kent area and stuff. It's kind of something that I've got quite literally at the moment in my blood. But with regards to Spain, I think it's a great market at the moment within Europe. I mean, I think the UK's got a very dominant scene within Europe in general. But then you've got these guys coming out of Estonia, which are literally doing fantastic. Like the Imperial Stouts, the Porters, they're doing phenomenal beers. But some of the stuff we're doing in Spain, I quite literally think it's world class. There's a hell of a lot of world class breweries out there. And that's basically what my ambition is, my aim is, and part of coming over here is to try and get a little bit more of that recognition. That it's, for people that like to travel for beer, Spain's a phenomenal country. And then you get the plus. You get the wines, you get the food, and you get everything on top of it as well.
Great. And wrap up soon. Yvonne, just follow up about Belgium. Belgian traditions, what you're doing, because we're going to finish the show soon. I want to end with the Yvonne from Brasserie de la Seine.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. Don't know if I deserve that, but, well, we have
your
always
beer does, bro.
Taken our inspiration from what the old guys before us have been doing. So obviously from tradition, we just wanted to modernize it. For instance, we make a triple, which is called Jean de Bois, which is when we rarely enter a beer in a contest, and if it's Jean de Bois, it's always out of category because it's too hoppy for the style, which is absolutely stupid, because if you take a triple back in the 1930s or 50s, it was hoppier than it is now. So this is just an example to show that we really embrace the tradition, giving it a more modern touch. We also like to play with barrel aged beers and to try to dig into ancient styles like saisons, for instance, Flemish reds, etc. So yeah. Tradition is always something we have in view, without being like narrow-minded. We also very rarely try to brew to style. We first try to brew something we like to drink, and that that's the rule. If it fits to a style, it's fantastic, and then we write it down on the label very 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 proudly. But it should not be like the goal. It's to brew something for you. It has to pleat your own palate first.
And what do you say to the yeast when you go to bed at night?
Oh, that's very intimate. Sorry, Jimmy. I cannot share anything with you.
Maybe I'll see you tomorrow.
That's a good one, Bobby. And Joel, what, you're going to say something about Spain. I bet you have a tour in Spain.
I was just going to jump in because Jamie was talking about people ought to come visit Spain. We have a tour going to Spain.
Shelton Brothers Insiders.
Next October. And I don't know why it's been so hard to convince people that there's great beer in Spain. But, I mean, people should trust me. I have a trustworthy-looking face, I think. Maybe not.
I completely agree with you.
For radio.
Yeah, I have a face for radio.
All right, and wrap it up. The festival's... By the time you listen to the show, the festival
So, yeah,
will
the
be
festival
over,
is so. This week. If you hear the show next week, you missed it. But we'll be somewhere else obscure next year. And we're looking forward to hanging with these guys in Buffalo, and it's been great to be here in New York. And we appreciate you gathering us all in one place, all these guys from different walks
and
of brewery.
Next week, our other show, you've got people coming after the festival. So we have more breweries next
people
week.
People coming through. Yeah, they all love to come through
New York. Who's here next week, BR?
I believe we've got Daronka.
Casa Bruja from Panama.
Casa Bruja.
From
couple
Panama.
Others.
Garden Path, hopefully, from Washington. Ron Extract used to work at Jester King.
The
a great brewery, great brewer, and sometimes underestimated.
So the Garden Path, that's Ron who was at.
These are the kind of people who try to make things that are delicate, subtle, and balanced. And it's hard to get an understanding those days with delicate beer. So I really support them. They're great people, great brewers.
That's great. And Peter, did you make a collaboration with Jester King?
Yeah, we brewed a year and a half ago. We brewed a Baltic Porter with a birch syrup, which is basically the same thing as a maple syrup, but from birch sap.
From birch, yeah.
And I just saw it's still on sale. I saw it just 2 hours ago.
That's great. Wow, this is a great show. Everybody, let's go around. So Peter, say your name and where you're from again. We're closing out.
Peter Kek, Puhela Brewery, Tallinn, Estonia. Thank you very much for having me.
Bobby, Barry Brewing, Oceanside, stand up.
Jamie Cruikshank, Napa Beer, Pamplona, Spain.
Yvonne de Batz, Brasserie La Seine, Brussels, Belgium. Thank you, Jamie.
It's a great show, guys. Everyone, if you haven't been to the festival, keep it on your radar. If you haven't been to the Tallinn Festival in Estonia, well, it's May 2020. There's so much good stuff going on in this room. Thanks for joining us. Big shout out to engineer Matt Patterson, our intern Kevin B. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host. Thanks for joining us here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.